Welcome back, everybody. We almost completed chapter 8, the first of the five chapters in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam. And where we ended up, Narada had given detailed instructions to Dhruva how to engage in the Yuga Dharma, Ashtanga Yoga process, that although it's meditation, it also involves, as we heard, deity worship, mantra meditation, austerities. Doesn't give all the details of the deity worship, but says that the standard practices of deity worship should be observed, and gives some elements. And he gives him a place, an auspicious place, a sacred place, Vrindavan, and even specifically Madhuvan within Vrindavan by the side of the river Jamuna. So today the river Jamuna doesn't flow there. But we understand that at that time the river Jamuna flowed there, or a tributary of the river Jamuna. And he was to bathe thrice daily in the sacred waters of the river Jamuna and so forth. And the conclusion was the immense gratitude that Dhruva felt for the kindness that he had received from Narada. And he circumambulated Narada, and off he went to Madhuvan. So that did not yet complete the chapter. As this chapter concludes, the Trikalagya Narada understood from Supersoul, or however he understood, intuitively he understood, Uttanapada is feeling terrible. Doesn't speak anything about Suruchi. At the end of this section, it does speak about Suniti. Suniti is praying to Vishnu for the protection of her son, knowing confidently that he will, nonetheless, offering her prayers throughout the day and night to Lord Vishnu to protect her son. But Uttanapada is feeling terrible. Imagine those of you that are parents, or those of you that aren't parents, you neglected a small child, your son, and he left home, and he went to the jungle because of your neglect. So Narada understands his feelings, and so that's one section, and then another section in this morning's class is the austerities that Dhruva underwent and the process that he underwent. And then the third section is Vishnu appears before him. So those are so Krishna comes. He didn't have to go find Krishna. Krishna came to him. That's an important dynamic in this pastime. So, meanwhile, back in the royal palace, where Maharaj Uttanapada was residing, this section begins. after Dhruva entered Madhuvan forest to execute devotional service, the great sage Narada thought it wise to go to the king to see how he was faring within the palace. When Narada Muni approached, the king received him properly, offering him due obeisances. Being seated comfortably, Narada began to speak. So the commentary teaches us, even though the king was in super distress, he was a cultured person, and cultured persons behave in cultured ways. He received Narada very nicely, with all due respect. And then a further explanation is, before we do anything, there's some steps. There's thinking, feeling, willing. That's what happens in the mind. And then following thinking, feeling, willing comes what the body does. So how the mind is oriented is very important for how our conduct is carried out. Now, conduct can help shape the mind. There's an interplay, a dynamic between the two, but the mind is above the senses. And even when there's disorder, if the mind is in disorder, the senses are going to be also. So it's important to have training in not just behaviors, but character. For devotees in our devotee communities, for our children in our families, and, you know, for the people around us, we should model, it's part of our opportunity, being devotees, to model not just the behavior, but good character. That means even when provoked in the workplace, when people are doing what people do in the workplace, we stay with our position of character, or in the community, or wherever you may be. This is part of a service opportunity that's driven by character. So, although he made a big boo-boo, he has character, and his thoughts and feelings, I'll read. What are some character-based thoughts and feelings that would propel us to offer all respect to others despite our own troubled state of mind? So you're passing through a rough patch sometimes. And when you're passing through a rough patch, it's very easy to have your blinders on and not see anything other than, you know, the difficulty that you're facing. Uttanapada is modeling for us a higher position than that one, and that is, even you're troubled, you don't depart from culture. Now, there's something that supports that, and that is a core conviction of who you really are, a spirit soul meant to be pleasing to Krishna. And that supports good character, which supports good behavior, even in this world of duality when things are troubling. I'll say it again. It's important. I'll say it a different way, but it's the same thing. Connected to the topic, a topic that I've been speaking about a lot in different venues, is Gita values. It's a work product of the Oxford University Religion Department, the Vaishnava Studies Division of the Religion Department. So they, together with some Hare Krishna teachers, they put together six Gita values. And so what's the relationship between values and our life? So one way to explain what I've been doing is explaining. There's the iceberg of culture. It's going to connect to this. So the iceberg of culture, an iceberg is a nice visual example. There's the tip of the iceberg, but everybody knows, at least those that died in the Titanic, they now know. Below the tip is the humongous, much larger portion than the tip that's above the surface of the water. So what's above the surface of the water, culture-wise, is things that are observable and measurable and, you know, behaviors. That's a part of culture. What people do, how they construct their buildings, how they do their music, how they, whatever, you know, is the culture of the time or a group of people or an individual. And then there's this big thing that's below. And the big thing that's below has two parts. One is values. Like for a group of people, it's their mission statement or, you know, the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be, there's certain inalienable rights of all citizens in America. So it's an explicit statement of these are truths that we hold. These are values. They're just, it's what we stand for. So like Prabhupada's seven principles, that's an example of values. Then there's behaviors, and behaviors should match values, and values should drive behaviors. So we may modify our behavior even before we hold the same value, because one helps the other. There's a dynamic in between. Then there's something that's at the very bottom of the iceberg, the iceberg of culture. And that is, aside from values, there are certain absolutes. It's not circumstantial. It doesn't come and go based on time and circumstance. It's just truths that always are. Like, you know, for us, we're spirit soul. Our values may go this way, that way. We're spirit soul. And more. We're spirit soul part of Krishna. More. We're spirit soul part of Krishna meant to serve the whole. More. We're meant to serve the whole in loving devotion and keep, so depending upon the depth of your Krishna consciousness, there will be certain core, non-circumstantial, always existing realities, and culture is meant to align them all. So, this is a behavior, he's offering due respect to Narada because it's a culture and it's a value that he holds even his mind is troubled. So something that supports that is, for us, spiritual culture. It's not just good behavior because we value being respectful to sadhus. That's culture. But for the pleasure of Krishna. And that supports and sustains the culture, so even over time and circumstance, that doesn't get lost. Those of you that do outreach in the Indian community, like, you know, our community development people, the Bhakti Vriksha groups, etc., you will find, universally, far more so than Western-born people, it's there in Western people, but from Indian-born people, people of Indian origin, parents are really concerned, big-time concerned, that their children receive culture because they're exposed to yuck in so many hours of the day and throughout their growing impressionable years of life, they're in school. And they're exposed to people that don't have culture. So parents, rightly so, are really concerned. So it's a secret. It's an open secret. If you want to grow your communities, take care of their children. And take care of their children and take care of your children, and communities will grow. Because parents are feeling our children need culture. Now the parents need culture. Generally. I mean, but they feel that we have to protect our children. That's, you know, good mood. But it helps bring the parents in if we take care of the children. Just like what's going on over in the hall over there. It allows the parents to pay attention. And as the children are getting from teachers that really are gifted at giving to children what helps children form good character. And, you know, the bottom of the iceberg also, they do it for Krishna. So there's a response to that question. We just took some moments to think about it. Okay, so starting with text 64 of chapter 8, we're going to hear the exchange between Narada and Uttanapada. I'm just going to read the verses. Very nice. First, Narada speaks. My dear king, your face appears to be withered up. And you look like you've been thinking of something for a very long time. What is that? Have you been hampered in following your path of religious rites, economic development, and sense gratification? How is your dharma, artha, and kama doing? The king replied, oh, best of the brahmanas, I'm very much addicted to my wife, and I am so fallen that I've abandoned all merciful behavior, even to my son, who's only 5 years old. I have banished him and his mother, even though he's a great soul and a great devotee, and so is his mother. My dear Brahmana, the face of my son was just like a lotus flower. I am thinking of his precarious condition. He is uprooted, and he might be very hungry. He might have lain down somewhere in the forest and the wolves might have attacked him to eat his body. Alas, just see how I was conquered by my wife. That's this verse. Just imagine my cruelty. Out of love and affection, the boy was trying to get up on my lap. But I did not receive him, nor did I even pat him for a moment. Just imagine how hard-hearted I am. So that's his internal condition, his troubled mind, rightly so. So starting with 68, for a few verses, Narada speaks. My dear king, please do not be aggrieved about your son. He is well protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You failed in protecting, but he is a great soul and he is well protected. Although you have no actual information of his influence, his reputation is already spread all over the world. My dear king, your son is very competent. He will perform activities which would be impossible even for great kings and sages. Remember, he's Trikalagya. Very soon, he will complete his task and come back home. You should know that he will also spread your reputation all over the world. The great sage Maitreya continued, the king Uttanapada, after being advised by Narada, practically gave up all duties in relation to his kingdom, which was very vast and wide, opulent like the goddess of fortune, and he simply began to think of his son, Dhruva. So, that's a nice way to become Krishna conscious. Think of a Krishna conscious pure devotee son. Or someone else's pure devotee, Krishna conscious son, or any pure devotee anywhere. It's a pathway to absorption in Krishna. So now comes some lessons in Sharanagati. This is, he is well protected. So when one takes shelter of a qualified protector, one is protected. That's a very simple principle. And Vishnu is the best of all protectors. The one who takes shelter of Vishnu or Krishna is protected. The acharyas ask this question, how can one live in the forest and not be taken care of by anyone? A five-year-old boy at that. Narada Muni gives the answer. Such persons, who are such persons? Those who take full shelter. Such persons are well protected. Sharanagati or surrender means acceptance of or firm belief that wherever the surrendered soul lives, he is always protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is never alone or unprotected. So you know this teaching from, it's from Padma Purana and it's a nectar devotion. It's from other sources also, the six limbs of surrender. This is a very important feature of this Dhruva story. It's a very important feature for us to become, go from mixed to pure bhakti. It requires taking shelter. And in that taking shelter, we don't do foolish things at the same time growing confidence in being always protected. It's one of the six limbs. Prabhupada spoke like this when he came to America and he was alone. You know, of course, as a sannyasi, that's just fine. But he never felt alone, because the instruction of his spiritual master was always with him, and that meant by that his spiritual master was always with him, protecting him through the instruction. And through the instruction, he had access to the protection of Krishna, and he was always protected by Krishna. Now, difficulties came, heart attacks, and just even after he took sannyas, the famous story, he was the very day, if I recall correctly, he was a horn of a cow or bull pierced his body, and it was like difficult. So it's not like when you're protected, you never stub your toe or you never, you know, have a medical problem or you never anything. But you're protected. In all circumstances, you're protected. It's a nice topic. Prahlad was, in Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami says, sometimes, like with Prahlad, he was protected, but like with Maharaj Parikshit, he wasn't protected, it appears, because the snake bird, in fact, bit him. But Jiva Goswami explains, he was protected, his consciousness was protected, and although the snake bird came, he was accepting that, and he went back to Godhead. That's protection. So it may not mean, it may or may not mean, from, you know, a physical difficulty. You'll never get in a car accident. You can drive at any speed and in any direction on any highway because I'm protected. Haribo. It's not like that. But in the ultimate sense, protected as well. Never alone. Never unprotected. And that applies to anyone, anywhere. Stay protected. It's sanata as opposed to anata. One who has a master is protected by the master, by a qualified master, and Krishna is such a qualified master. So that's that section, the Uttanapada section. Now, then the second section is Dhruva's back in the forest. Having arrived at Madhavan, he took his bath in the river Jamuna and observed fasting in the night with great care and attention. And commentary says, after that, as advised by the great sage Narada, he engaged himself in worshipping the Supreme Personality of God. Actually, it's the same translation. So he got right down to his instruction. Prabhupada writes, our only concern should be how to execute the order of the spiritual master. A spiritual master is expert in giving special instructions to each of his disciples, and if the disciple executes the order of the spiritual master, that is the way of his perfection. So going from mixed to pure devotion, very key element. Suniti pointed the way, as we discussed yesterday, Madhupati's question. Dhruva accepted. Take shelter of the personality of Godhead in full devotional service. Take shelter of the soul. Knowing that that was being carried, Supersoul sent Narada. Narada tested him. Narada gave him instructions and mantra. He's got his instructions and he's meticulously, with great determination, great austerity, etc., he's fulfilling the instruction. That is the way of his perfection, to go from mixed to pure. So now, hold on to your socks, because we're going to hear what his austerities were. For the first month, Dhruva Maharaj, remember he's 5 years old, ate only fruits and berries on every third day. Had a big feast. Only to keep his body and soul together, and in this way he progressed in his worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's doing all these other things. In his second month, Dhruva ate only every 6 days. And he changed his diet. For his eatables, he took only dry grass and leaves every 6 days. Thus, he continued his worship. In the third month, he drank water only every 9 days. You know, near Jalakadasi. Every 9 days. Thus he remained completely in trance and worshiped the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is adored by selected verses. In the fourth month, Dhruva Maharaj became a complete master of the breathing exercise, and thus he inhaled air only every 12th day. Hold your breath. This way he became completely fixed in his position and worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the fifth month, Maharaj Dhruva, the son of the king, had controlled his breathing so perfectly that he was able to stand, as we see in this painting, only on one leg, just as a column stands without motion, and concentrate his mind fully on the Parabrahman. And 77, he completely controlled the senses and their objects, and in this way he fixed his mind without diversion to anything else upon the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, doesn't specifically mention his chanting of the mantra. It was specifically mentioned when the mantra was given three times daily. And now, next is the effects of Dhruva's meditation. When Dhruva Maharaj thus captured the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the refuge of the total material creation, and who is the master of all living entities, the three worlds began to tremble. So we're going to hear something about this captured, but taken into the heart. It's the word-for-word translation, captured. In commentary, the Acharyas ask, Jiva Goswami addresses, he asks the question and then addresses it. How is it possible for Dhruva Maharaj to capture Brahman within his heart? What does that mean? So he answers, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the origin of Brahman, that's the Brahmajyoti, for since he comprises everything material and spiritual, there cannot be anything greater than he. Many persons, especially the Mayavadi philosophers, consider Brahman the biggest, all expanding substance. But according to this verse and other Vedic literatures, such as Bhagavad Gita, the resting place of Brahman is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as the resting place of the sunshine is the sun globe. So, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, 14th chapter Bhagavad Gita, the last verse. Krishna is the Pratishtha of Brahman. So the question, again, is how is that which is all-pervading within his heart? And the answer is it's Parabrahman was captured within his heart, and since Parabrahman is the pratishtha, the basis and support of Brahman, Parabrahman and Brahman were captured within his heart. Srila Jiva Goswami therefore says that since the transcendental form of the Lord is the seed of all greatness, he is the supreme Brahman. Since the supreme Brahman was situated in the heart of Dhruva Maharaj, he became heavier than the heaviest, and therefore everything trembled in all three worlds, and he also says in the spiritual world. Now, I don't know why he says that, but he says that. How does the spiritual world tremble? Because he became very heavy. I don't have an answer, so don't ask me, because I don't have an answer. So there's these three features we all know. It's embedded within this story, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan features of the Absolute. And he is absorbed in the Paramatma, if you remember the meditation that was recommended by Narada, it's the Paramatma feature standing on the world of the lotus, etc. So he has captured this Paramatma feature within the core of his heart, and as we heard, the soul and his intelligence. By associating constantly with the Supreme Personality in his heart, Dhruva Maharaj naturally became equal to the greatest, or Brahman, by his association, and thus became the heaviest. And the entire universe trembled, not just the earth planet. Text 79. As Dhruva Maharaj, the king's son, kept himself steadily standing on one leg, the pressure of his big toe pushed down half the earth. I don't know why only half. Just as an elephant being carried on a boat rocks the boat left and right with his every step. It's a nice image, huh? This devotee in the front row here, she did all the graphics. I don't know where she got that image. Here's a further explanation of the same verse. When Dhruva Maharaj was at home, this is purport, although he was a king's son, he was prevented from getting on the lap of his father. But when he became advanced in self-realization or devotional service, by the pressure of his toe, he could push down the whole earth. That is the difference between ordinary consciousness and Krishna consciousness. So in case you want to press down the earth, become Krishna conscious. In ordinary consciousness, a king's son may be refused something, even by his father. But when the same person becomes fully Krishna conscious, within his heart, he can push down the earth with the pressure of his toe. And Vishwanath explains this word pradesha. That's the distance of the pressing down the earth. He explains a pradesha is a measurement of distance, and the earth sank down to half a pradesha, or 5 inches, half of 5 inches. This is Vishwanath. And elsewhere in Prabhupada's writings, he doesn't say a pradesha is 5 inches. Sometimes he says it's 6, sometimes 8, but that's like, okay, so it makes it more clear. His big toe was pressing down the earth 2.5 inches. It's a detail. Next verse. When Dhruva Maharaj became practically one in heaviness with Lord Vishnu, the total consciousness, Vishvam Atmanaha, due to his fully concentrating Abhidhyayati and Ananyayadhyaya, and closing all the holes of his body, the total universal breathing became choked up, and all the great demigods in all the planetary systems felt suffocated and thus took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He became a little powerful little boy to achieve Vishnu's benediction to get his kingdom. So as the demigods were suffocating, they went to Lord Vishnu at Svetadvipa. Prabhupada writes, the example of Dhruva Maharaja's closing the holes of his personal body and thereby closing the breathing holes of the total universe clearly indicates that a devotee, by his personal devotional service, can influence all the people of the whole world to become devotees of the Lord, just as Prabhupada did. On the strength of his Krishna consciousness, that influence was spread throughout the world just by his being on the planet. Of course, he moved around the planet, but his influence was sent everywhere by his presence. If there is only one pure devotee in pure Krishna consciousness, he can change the total consciousness of the world into Krishna consciousness. So we're not so qualified. But we can influence to some degree, to the degree that there's purity of consciousness. To some degree we can influence something just by carrying Krishna consciousness within. So off the demigods go to the abode of Lord Vishnu, Svetadvipa. And they offer their prayers and they make this request. Dear Lord, you are the refuge of all moving and non-moving living entities. We feel all living entities to be suffocating, their breathing process choked up. We have never experienced such a thing. Since you are the ultimate shelter of all surrendered souls, we have therefore approached you. Kindly save us from this danger. So this is what demigods do when they have a problem they can't sort out. They go to dad, to their father. He's their source. Or grandfather, great-grandfather. The Supreme Lord is the ultimate goal for the solution to all problems within this material world. In the spiritual world, there are no problems, but the material world is always problematic. And continuing, Vishvam Purnam Sukhayate, it's a statement from Prabodhananda Saraswati. Prabodhananda Saraswati was the uncle of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. He lived in Vrindavan, so he speaks like this. He wrote like this. Vishvam Purna Sukhayate. Devotees are free from all problems because they are fully surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For a devotee, everything in the world is very pleasing because he knows how to use everything in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Next verse. Vishnu heard and he replied, my dear demigods, do not be perturbed by this. It's due to the severe austerity and full determination of the son of King Uttanapada, who is now fully absorbed in thought of me. He has obstructed the universal breathing process. You can safely return to your respective homes. I shall stop this boy in his severe acts of austerities, and you will be saved from this situation. So now comes so many nice paintings. There's not all of them are shown, but beautiful paintings of Krishna comes or Vishnu comes. He has simply concentrated his mind on me. This will not destroy anything. That's Vishwanath. So, the Lord appears before Dhruva. We're going going to hear, so this is the final section for this morning. Maitreya is continuing to describe. When the demigods were thus reassured by the personality of Godhead, they were freed from all fears. And after offering their obeisances, they returned to the respective heavenly planets. Then the Lord, who is non-different from the Sahasrashir Shah incarnation, got on the back of Garuda, who carried him to the Madhuvan forest to see his servant, Dhruva. So we're going to take a look at some of the words that are highlighted in the Sanskrit here, the bottom line first. Madhorvanam, that's Madhuvana. Britya Didrikshaya Gataha. By means of Garuda, the Lord went to Madhuvan with a desire to see his servant Dhruva. So nice paintings of Vishnu riding on the back of Garuda. Prabhupada's purport. According to Sanatana Goswami in his Bhagavatamrita, the Sahasra Shirsha personality of Godhead who appeared at that time was the incarnation known as Prishnigarbha. He provided the planet known as Dhruvaloka for the habitation of Dhruva Maharaj. Now, Sahasra Shirsha, some of you are familiar with the Purusha Sukta prayers from Rig Veda. Those are the prayers that the demigods recited to Lord Vishnu when they went to appeal to Lord Vishnu to descend on earth and to relieve the earth of the burden of demoniac kings, Purusha Sukta. And it begins, Sahasra Shirsha Purusha, Sahasraksha, Sahasrapat. So it means the Lord who has many heads. And that can mean Ananta, or it can mean the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who has many, 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 many manifestations and thus many heads. It's a prayer to Vishnu, because the rest of the verses are describing the process of creation, which comes from Vishnu. Through agencies, of course, through Brahma and so forth. But he is this Vishnu function is a creation function. And he oversees the creation. So the prayer goes to he who is overseeing the creation, the maintenance person, maintaining the whole universe, as well as being ultimately the source of and the destruction of the universe under his order. Similarly, in this is the reference here in Prabhupada's purport is Sanatana Goswami in his Brihat Bhagavatamrita, but we also find the same message in Rupa Goswami's Lagu Bhagavatamrita, and that is Prishnigarbha. He is called Sahasra Shirsha, which refers to Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, because they are non-different, both being Vishnu. Now, there's Vishnu Tattva that has three names or three features. Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Shirodakshay Vishnu. It can mean any one of them or all three of them because they're the same. So just keeping it really simple, there's one Paramatma within the hearts of all living entities. It's the same Paramatma. It's not like multiple Paramatmas. Expansions of the one Paramatma is the one Paramatma. So however many persons are in the room. It's not there's that many Paramatmas. there's that many jivas, but one paramatma. Variously situated, one paramatma. And Garbhadakshe Vishnu is another category, but it's also Vishnu. And for each universe, there's one. So however many universes, unlimited, one Garbhadakshe Vishnu. So one and one and one Mahavishnu, and there's actually one Vishnu. So the Sahasra Shirsha term applies to any one of them or all three of them. That's what's being said here by Rupa Goswami. Okay. It's a detail, but the prayer is to the abode. Let's go a little bit further. The abode of Vishnu that the demigods went to is the abode of Paramatma or Shiradakshe Vishnu. That's Svetadvip. In this universe, this, we've discussed this, the spiritual planet that's within this universe, Svetadvip, is the abode of Shiradakshay Vishnu. It's the ocean of milk. Shirodakshayi Vishnu, the ocean of milk. The Shiradak ocean is the ocean of milk. So it's Paramatma, but so Paramatma is the one that appeared before Dhruva and the, according to Lagva Bhagavatamrita, we don't need to quibble with Rupa Goswami, the Sahasra Shirsha that's being referred to in the Bhagavatam verse, this is specifically referring to Garbhadakshe Vishnu. He states because they're none different. Okay. Next text. We're only going through verse 5 this morning. Text 2. The form of the Lord, which was brilliant like lightning, and in which Dhruva Maharaj in his mature yogic process was fully absorbed in meditation, all of a sudden disappeared. Thus, Dhruva was perturbed, and his meditation broke. But as soon as he opened his eyes, he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally present, just as he had been seeing the Lord in his heart. Was it like he just changed himself out or something? He's everywhere. No, he had a pastime. He came on the back of Garuda from Vaikuntha, apparently. But he's everywhere because he's Paramatma. He didn't have to come from anywhere, go to anywhere, do anything. He just chose a pastime. Here's a nice commentary by Jiva Goswami on this verse, found in Priti Sandarbha, comparing the Brajabasi's meditation and Dhruva's meditation. It's very esoteric, so listen carefully. In their trance of separation, the devotees of Braja are aware of nothing but Krishna. Their ecstasy is so deep that, as a natural effect of remembering Krishna, they see him physically before him, before them. Now, contrast is Dhruva. Other pure devotees whose love for Krishna is not on the same level of perfection have separate experiences of him internally and externally. Dhruva, for example, concentrated his mind on the Lord, Vishnu, in deep meditation. But his internal vision of the Lord did not expand into a vision outside like that of the gopis. Only when Lord Vishnu came to Dhruva to offer him special mercy did the Lord disappear from Dhruva's heart to show himself externally. The gopis are super exalted. And what happened, this is also important, what happened with Dhruva is going to be expanded on further in this chapter 9. It was special mercy to show his form before him like this. It was his special mercy. In reciprocation with his innocence and devotion and dedication and determination, special mercy. Because he was already seeing the Lord within his heart, but special mercy, as it's said here, to offer him special mercy. Now the special mercy was showing his form, touching his head with his conch, and so forth. Exchanging words with him. Special mercy. Further commentary. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena, a saintly person who has developed love of Godhead by devotional service, always sees the Lord's transcendental form of Shyamasundara. This Shyamasundara form of the Lord within the heart of a devotee is not imaginary. So you recognize the painting. Who is this? You're mumbling. No. In his maturity of devotion, although he was blind, he was able to see Krishna within his heart, and because of his devotion, knowing that he was blind, he would come and sit before his devotee, who knew Krishna was present, but couldn't see him with material eyes, but he could see him within his heart and sense his presence in many nice exchanges. Bilva Mangala Thakur. So, continuing with the purport. When a devotee becomes mature in his prosecution of devotional service, he sees face to face the same Shyamasundara he has thought of during the entire course of his devotional service. That's this mature, special mercy Krishna appears. One can see him. If Krishna so desires. So what are we supposed to, what's the lesson for us here? The practical application lesson from Dhruva. We just stay packed up, fixed up, using Prabhupada's language, packed up, fixed up, in the bhakti process that's given to us. And we can expect Krishna's mercy. We can pray for Krishna's mercy, but we can expect Krishna's mercy. So praying for what you can expect is not a problem. Krishna comes. That's the theme of this section, and it's a lesson to be learned. There's statements by our acharyas, abundant statements that again and again and again, it's not that this is in Ramayana. The Supreme, when Ram comes to the sages in the Dandak forest, he comes to them. They don't have to go to him. He comes to them because of their exclusive devotion to him. And this is the nature of the Lord's reciprocation. So we don't make him our order supplier. Hey, Krishna, come here. That's not the mood. But the mood of Krishna is, he'll come. When he sees one is faithful and carefully continuing, just like Shabari, carefully continuing to serve, expecting his mercy will come. Now she was told by Sage Matanga that he would come. But we're also told, do we have the same faith that Shabari has? Prabhupada said this at the time of the deity installation of Rukmini Dwarkadish, one of the many things that That was a very memorable event. He said, you should worship the deity in such a way, with such devotion and love, one day he will speak to you. And he will say, I am like this. Now he didn't elaborate, but he will reveal himself. We have to make ourselves, our business, become eligible. Krishna's business, reciprocate affectionately, however he wants. And that's something we can count on. Krishna is kind. Krishna is affectionate to his devotee. That's the lesson. Just three more verses and we're finished for this morning. You see these highlighted terms in the verse. We'll be discussing them. When Dhruva Maharaj saw his Lord just in front of him, he was greatly agitated and offered him obeisances and respect. He fell flat before him like a rod and became absorbed in love of Godhead. This is Bhava Bhakti. Dhruva Maharaj, in ecstasy, looked upon the Lord as if, there's several as ifs here, Iva, he were drinking the Lord with his eyes, kissing the lotus feet of the Lord with his mouth, and embracing the Lord with his arms. He did literally do all those things. But that's what was in his heart, as if. And there's Dhruvatila, and there's Lord Vishnu, and many such wonderful paintings. We don't want to forget Garuda. Prabhupada writes in his purport, all these features of Dhruva Maharaj's bodily expression indicate that upon seeing the Lord face to face, he developed the eight kinds of transcendental ecstasy in his body. It's not over yet. Although Dhruva Maharaj was a small boy, he wanted to offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in suitable language, but because he was inexperienced, he could not adjust himself immediately. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being situated in everyone's heart, could understand Dhruva Maharaj's awkward position. Out of his causeless mercy, he touched his conch shell to the forehead of Dhruva Maharaj, who stood before him with folded hands. And there are many images of this exchange. It's emotional and devotional and meaningful. It's a reciprocation. He was already in this state of ecstasy, so it wasn't just like the cause of ecstasy. It was another something that's taking place. Prabhupada writes, the personality of Godhead being situated in everyone's heart specifically gives a devotee intelligence to describe him. It is therefore understood that when a devotee writes or speaks about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his words are dictated by the Lord from within. Nice painting, huh? Prabhupada dictating the Bhaktivedanta purports. Later, he would sit as busy as he was, as pressing as the responsibilities that he was carrying. He would have somebody read, and without becoming fatigued, he would sit and listen for a long time, hours, and sometimes comment, I have not written these literatures. Prabhupada said, Krishna has written. I was just writing down. He was just sharing his heart. He was aware that he was like the pen moving on the page. He was the instrument of Krishna speaking. So we should be aware like that also, the instrument of Krishna speaking. Prabhupada said it specifically other times as well without repeating. Krishna was speaking through him. Krishna was speaking. Prabhupada's voice, the tongue and mouth and lungs and everything, and Krishna was speaking. Commentary. When Dhruva Maharaj felt hesitant, not knowing how to describe the Lord for want of sufficient experience, the Lord, out of his causeless mercy, touched his conch shell to Dhruva's forehead, and he was transcendentally inspired. This transcendental inspiration is called Brahma Maya, meaning potency. Because when one is thus inspired, the sound he produces exactly corresponds to the sound vibration of the Vedas. This is not the ordinary sound vibration of this material world. Therefore, the sound vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra, although presented in the ordinary alphabet, should not be taken as mundane or material. In this connection, Prabhupada also makes reference to this very famous, well-known, we mentioned it already, we're mentioning it again, Hari Bhakti Surodaya verse, Svamin Kritar Tosmi Varam Niyache. Let's say it together. Svamin Kritar Tosmi Varam Niyache. Oh, my Lord, because I was seeking an opulent material position, I was performing severe types of penance and austerity. Now I have gotten you, who are very difficult for the great demigods, saintly persons and kings to attain. I was searching after a piece of glass, but instead I have found a most valuable jewel. Therefore, I'm so satisfied that I do not wish to ask any benediction from you. So Jiva Goswami makes reference to this verse in his Bhakti Sandarbha. These are the words of Dhruva. They do not spring from full realization of the sweet aspect of the Lord. These words arose from the touch of the Lord's conch. Therefore, it is evident that gradually he obtained that realization. So he was following the Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, and Jiva Goswami here is contrasting the Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, where it's the experience is on the spontaneous stage. The sweetness of the personality of Godhead arises from that spontaneous stage. The purity certainly can arise from the Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti stage. That's the contrast he's making. Just as Rupa Goswami taught, Jiva Goswami is teaching in his Sandarbhas. Final verse for this morning. At that time, Dhruva Maharaj became perfectly aware of the Vedic conclusion. He hadn't even gone to school. I read Bhagavad Gita. And understood the absolute truth and his relationship with all living entities in accordance with the line of devotional service to the Supreme Lord, whose fame is widespread, Dhruva, who in the future would receive a planet which would never be annihilated, even during the time of dissolution, offered his deliberate and conclusive prayers. So that's what's going to happen after breakfast, is we'll hear his prayers. They're very famous, very celebrated. I haven't memorized them, but I was thinking it'd be nice to memorize them because they're so important. Dhruva Maharaj never went to any school or academic teacher to learn Vedic conclusion, but because of his devotional service to the Lord, as soon as the Lord appeared and touched his forehead with his conch shell, automatically the entire Vedic conclusion was revealed to him. The Vedas indicate that only one who has unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord as well as the spiritual master is the Vedic conclusion revealed. This is that same verse again, remember? Let's say it. Yasya devi para bhaktir yata devi tata garo tasyaite katitar yarta prakashante mahatmanaha. So many persons, just by guru padashraya, that's the language of Rupa Goswami, guru padashraya, they had firm faith and had taken full shelter, unflinching faith and shelter in Srila Prabhupada. They became powerful devotees without going to school and studying and doing all the rigors that normally precede understanding these very elevated subject matters, just by mercy and their devotion. Now, Prabhupada wanted us to study his books. So by devotion, we should study his books, not just be devoted to going on Sankirtan. We study his books. That's part of our instruction. Okay, so that's this morning's session. Can you turn the light on, please, back there? We're going to start with his prayers after breakfast session. So we have 7 minutes. See if there's some discussion. I see some hands over there. Put your hand up again. He sees another hand back there. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you very much for enlivening us in this morning. It was so great. Maharaj, you mentioned about the bhakti of gopis, vajavasis versus the Dhruva Maharaj. So we understand that the gopis, their bhakti, that in a ultimate mature state, that we cannot even see that it's we cannot even differentiate that it happens, you know, in the spiritual world or the material world, that it is ultimate of it. Whereas it comes to Dhruva Maharaj, so we can see also that it is mixed with the material as well as the spiritual, or I don't know whether I am understanding that correctly.
No.
Yeah. So
he had achieved the stage of pure bhakti.
Okay.
His material was gone, so it wasn't mixed anymore.
So then how we can differentiate?
The path was vaidhi and raganuga and prema. That's the distinction. Their love was the most super excellent matured stage of spontaneous loving devotion. His was and the regulative devotion approach. Does that help?
Could you explain a little more on that?
Well, it's very elevated and kind of esoteric, but sure. Narada is a Vaikunthavasi. Right? Narada and Uddhava in Brihad Bhagavatamrita describe the aspiration of Gopakumar is beyond even anything we could dream of because they're Vaikunthavasis. You follow?
Yeah.
Gopakumar was from Vrindavan and that's what he wanted. He wanted Madan Gopal. And they knew that's what he wanted. And they saw, they speak to him, your eligibility surpasses us. Now they're pure devotees. They're not mixed devotees. But there's a certain mood of their love. And Narada had passed on that mood. And Vishnu appeared. So it's not that those who are residents of Vaikuntha, they're not pure. They're pure. They're not mixed. They're pure. By this stage, he had become pure. But the mood of his purity is not that of the residents of Vrindavan. like this nice example of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, not being allowed to enter the rasa dance, although she's the goddess of fortune. It's not because she wasn't pure. The mood didn't match. The love of the residents of Vrindavan is inaccessible to Vaikunthavasi. And how does one get that? By association with one who has it. That's the teaching of Rupa Goswami. So the love of the residents of Vrindavan, gopis being spoken of in particular by Jiva Goswami, they were another type of bhakti. And their type of bhakti was unique, distinct from the type of pure love, not mixed, pure love of Dhruva by this time. It's a different type of love. Yeah. Most exalted. And it's just helping us to understand the exaltedness, one of the features of the exaltedness of their devotion. Very special. Yeah. And that's the kind of love that we're being invited into by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by following him and his followers. Okay?
Yeah. Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Two questions up front. Paramarupa, put your hand up.
Hey, Krishna Guru Maharaj. Usually when a devotee performs devotional service, we know that there is sarvatma snapanam, there is a cooling effect in the hearts of others, and there is a very positive effect. But in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, in his maturity, others are suffocating, and they were not able to even breathe properly. So is it because Dhruva Maharaj's initial inclination was...
You want to know what his contemplations were? You have to ask him.
I'm just wondering, usually the maturity of devotional service of an individual should lead to an all-encompassing positive and quality.
My answer is very simple. By this time, he's moving according to the indication of Supersoul. And part of the compassion feature of his high-grade devotion was to teach a lesson to the demigods. And us. Now, Super Soul could have arranged it differently. He arranged it how he arranged it. But on Dhruva's platform, he was doing what he was doing under the indication of Super Soul. By that stage...
Thank you.
One more. We're going to end.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. My question is, why Lord Vishnu is called Prishnigarbha and also is Garbhodaksha?
Sahasrashirsha. Sahasrashirsha.
Okay.
And the Sahasrashirsha, our acharyas say, Jiva Goswami says, Rupa Goswami says, that indicates Garbhadakshe Vishnu, because it's one. Vishnu is Vishnu. Now, your question. Why Prishnigarbha and why Garbhadakshe Vishnu? Why this two equal nomenclatures? That's your question?
My question is, why Lord is named as Prishnigarbha? Prishnigarbha meaning?
What does it mean? The Garbha of Prishni, son of Prishni, Prishni and Sutapa. Lord Vishnu appeared as the son of Sutapa and Prishni, known as Prishnigarbha, or you could say Prishni Suta. Prishnigarbha. That's why. Is that right?
Yes, Prabhu. Yes, Maharaj. And one more question is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu gave darshan or Sthirodakshaya Vishnu gave darshan to Dhruva Maharaj?
Say it again slower.
Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, he gave darshan to Dhruva Maharaj or Sthirodakshaya?
Darshan?
Huh. Who appeared?
It's just different nomenclature from the same entity. Some persons know you by this name, some persons know you by that name, and some persons by another name, but you're one person.
Sure. Yes, Maharaj.
Okay?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you.
Okay, last question.
Maharaj, my question is about the iceberg, culture of iceberg.
Yeah.
We all come from different cultures when we join ISKCON,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And is it true that if we focus on the deeper levels, the
yes.
one that, then the external ones will automatically
yes.
Get transformed
yes.
to that?
Okay. Yes. Uncultured, my terminology is America is the culture of no culture. But the could you get out of the way? Thank you. The culture of the no culture people, us, American people, there is a natural spiritual culture that awakens as the deeper Krishna consciousness awakens. Now, we may have to just do some behavior that's not like part of our culture, but it becomes part of our culture, not just by practice, but by deeper Krishna consciousness. Then it becomes not just a behavior. Becomes something much deeper and profound and unwavering when there's this alignment of awakening of our Krishna consciousness, and then the behavior and the value of the culture is there. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.